You're listening to the Drummers Education Connection Podcast. Interviews with the greatest drummers in the business and roundtable discussions with industry leaders and teachers from around the globe to help provide performance, insight, and inspiration.
Yeah.
16 bars of pure ecstasy. All I need now is a glow stick.
Or a cigarette.
Or a glow stick. Let's hear those rototoms again, Rick.
Exactly.
There we go.
There we go. Okay. Awesome. Nice. Everybody, welcome to Drummers Education Connection. I am Bart Robley, and I'm here with three amazing friends of mine. I'm going to start with our guest host. I'm going to introduce him first in Boise, Idaho, Fred Rock Fisher.
Yeah, here I am.
Fred Rock.
There he is. With a blue aura around him.
Let's see if I can get
Sorry, that. All this talk of ecstasy and rototoms, and he has a blue aura.
Whoa.
Man, how's he do that? Wow. In San Diego, the man with the most bitchin' sound in rototoms in the world, Rick Stojak.
Oh,
play him again. Play him again. Awesome. And then in Tucson, Arizona, the stick trick guy, Chip Ritter.
Give us a trick.
Hello. What's up? How are you doing?
I can't talk today. Everybody, welcome to Drummers Education Connection. Thank you guys for watching and being part of our little dog and pony show today. Our friend Jeremy's out, and so our buddy Fred up in Idaho has come to the rescue once again. He is definitely part of the DEC family, and we always appreciate that we can call him and say, Fred, come on and help us talk about things so we can just yak for a while. And he always does it. So thank you for coming on the show. Hey, as usual, folks, we want to start with a thing called good things. And what we do, we throw it around to everybody and they can tell us what their good thing is. It can be drumming wise. It can be non-drumming wise. It can be whatever. So I'm going to throw it to Fred again first. What do you got going on this one, Fred?
Wahoo! I got all kinds of good stuff happening. First of all, I'm always thankful for this show. And the other day I was driving around and I thought, this just popped in my head. I said, I haven't talked to Chip in a while. So I tried to call Chip, left him a voicemail. He called me back the next day and we just talked about nothing really. I just wanted to hear Chip's voice. And he sent me a little sample of his book that he's working on that I checking out. Looks really, really cool. Excited for him. Excited for Bart's book that's coming out. Rick sends me stuff to check out. It's just like, it's such a cool networking thing we got going here of friends and drums and those kind of things is really great. My number three son, Ian, just graduated high school. So we had that ceremony last week. And then this weekend, I'm making a brisket for the whole family to come over and celebrate. And then he leaves I think just under 2 weeks, he's going to be touring with the Battalion Drum and Bugle Corps again this summer out of Salt Lake. So I'll be in Indianapolis again.
Don't do it.
I can walk. I can walk. And I promise I'm going to walk. I'm going to walk.
Wrap yourself in bubble wrap.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Just be careful.
It's been 10 months since I broke my leg. I still waddle around like a penguin a little bit, but I can drum fine. I've been able to get up and down stairs okay. I can get up and down a ladder.
I know.
It's still pretty swollen. I have my last physical therapy session tomorrow. It's just improving all the time. It's improving all the time. And I asked my physical therapist, I was like, how much longer is this going to be swollen? He said, like, another 6 months. Wow. And that was 2 weeks ago. So I still have a long road ahead. He's like, I don't think you really understand how bad of a break this is. And okay, well, whatever. This is my first time and last time hopefully ever experiencing anything like that.
Yeah, so, you don't want to do that again, man. Get yourself a crash helmet.
So those are my plans, man.
Rick, what do you got going on that's good, buddy?
Today is Julia and my 16th wedding anniversary.
Yes.
Love her so much. She's just the ultimate, and I'm just so grateful for every day with her. We've been together for 18 years. So we met at a gig I was playing, and I asked her if she was a musician, and she said no, but she had already played keyboards and flute and was a drum major in middle school, super cute. And I asked her if she wanted drum lessons, and she said no. And her sister, the amazing Laura Christine, who's out going on the road in Europe with Dark Angel, this week, Laura took my business card, which I was giving to Julia. Julia's like this, and Laura said, take a drum lesson. So Julia took a drum lesson, and 2 years later, we're married, and she's a badass drummer.
Rick, hey, Rick.
Yeah.
What's wrong with her? I'm kidding, dude.
Congratulations, man.
Thanks, guys. We're going to have a real sweet dinner out tonight.
Nice, man. That's awesome. Yeah. Chip, what do you got going on that's good, buddy?
Ben, what I got going on that's good is most recently, a friend of mine, you guys, I've talked about this before, but an anonymous donor, former student of mine, came to me and he was like, you know what, look, man, if you know any kids that come across your way that don't have a drum set and are practicing and showing, you know, interest and they're showing they've got gumption to practice and play the drums and learn the material, let me know, because I'll go halves in with you on drums. And we just got our fifth drum set given to a kid without a kit. You know what I mean? It's just like a really cool thing behind the scenes. The kid doesn't know who got the drum set for him. It's a donation gift. And we just consider it an act of humanity, trying to help get more sticks in the hands and more drummers on the planet. So we've got another, this one was a Yamaha mesh head drum set, electronic kit. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so now he's got a full drum set to practice on, and it just makes my heart smile to think there's another drummer there.
That's so cool, man.
How about you, Bart? What's going on good with you?
Well, I leave Friday. I fly out for a two-week tour with SMB. Start in Fredericksburg, Texas. And the night we get into town, we have off, and there's this great German restaurant there. So we're going to have some great German food, and really looking forward to that. And then we've got shows all through Michigan, Indiana, Wisconsin, all over. We end up in Kentucky and coming back home on the 15th. So we're going to be out for 2 weeks. I'm looking forward to that. And then the other good thing that really is kind of goes hand in hand musically. Anybody knows me, anybody that knows me knows that my three favorite drummers are John Bonham.
Yeah.
And Fred Rock Fisher.
Yay.
And so anyway, the other night, Leah and I went down to Spotlight 29 area down in India. It was actually Fantasy Springs, and we saw Jason Bonham with his Led Zeppelin experience, and they did the entire Physical Graffiti album.
Wow.
Oh my God, man.
Wow.
He's if you've never seen Jason Bonham, I mean, it's the only difference between him and his dad really is that he plays a double pedal as opposed to just the incredibly fast rabbit foot. And oh my God, it's in his DNA. He sounds just like his dad.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
He's so good. And the band, I'm a firm believer, they probably sound better than Zeppelin did live, because the singer plays acoustic guitar, the bass player is always playing, they have a separate keyboard player, guitar player, mandolin player, kind of a utility guy. Oh my God, they were phenomenal. So that was my good thing. I got a great
That's
time.
That's awesome. And, you know, yeah. Hey, Bart, in 1997, they had a Jason Bonham, his concert was coming to The Rock in Tucson, Arizona, and the radio station had a Jason Bonham drum off.
And did you play in it?
I played in it and I won.
Shut up.
I played the Becoming lick to Pantera's Becoming, the open bass drum lick, and I won on the radio call-in show. And I got to play his drum set in front of the crowd, and I played Good Times, Bad Times. And Jason and the singer kept going, Chip Ritter, Chip Ritter. And Jason was like, all right, enough, Chip Ritter. All right, get off my drums. He was a sweet guy. But I got to tell you, man, that night his band played and I hung out and watched the show and I was hanging out in the street and he drank a Budweiser just tilted it up and drank the whole beer in one up. Like that, I was pretty impressed with that. And then they were letting him ride a Harley out front of the bike on the street. So he's pretty crazy, man. He's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Was his band Bonham at that time?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, yeah. So
great band. And I asked him for advice on how does he make his fill so smooth, going from a beat to a fill to a beat. And he got on his drums and he played a beat and a fill and a beat. And he goes, I just do that. I was like, thanks. thanks for that. Thank you, Jason.
Well, if you get a chance, man, to go see Bonham.
I've heard it was good.
Oh God, it was kill. And I tell you, they played the entire Physical Graffiti album and it phenomenal. Just unbelievable. It was phenomenal. Really, really, really great.
Right on, man. That's a good thing.
They had a good time. So anyway, so that's my good thing. So today's topic is overwhelmed, right?
Overwhelmed.
And we were talking about being overwhelmed. And I'm going to, since I'm kind of the guy that's yakking right now, I'm just going to jump in with where I'm feeling overwhelmed. And we're going to talk about advice on how to get through that. Right. It's not just about being overwhelmed. It's about how to come through on the other side from being overwhelmed. And I think also, maybe the way that we help each other as a drumming community, if you will. As I mentioned, I fly out Friday for a 2-week run. And, one of the things that I think a lot of people don't realize when you're in a touring band, there are so many things. Life still happens while you're gone, right? I mean, like, inevitably, I hit the road. I haven't even played one note yet, and I get a call from my wife. Oh, my God, the car broke down, or there's a leak in the faucet, whatever. It always happens, like, before the first gig. And then by the time I get home, it's been fixed. And, but there's that kind of stuff. You still have to pay your bills. You got to make sure that, you don't get paid till the end of the tour, so you got to make sure you're not overdrafting. And all these things that happen in normal life. And I think nowadays, maybe I'm on a bit of a different subject here, but with mobile apps and cell phones and FaceTime and everything, touring's a lot easier than it used to be. And you can still be on top of it, but you still have to be on top of it. And that in and of itself can be overwhelming. So like, for example, this morning I packed all my clothes because the trailer's getting loaded to take off and I don't want to check my bag. So I'm going to put it in the trailer to take off to Texas tomorrow. My drums are already in the trailer. Got to load the trailer tomorrow. Got 3 days worth of teaching. Got to be at the airport at 4 a.m, all that sort of stuff. And man, it can just weigh on you. So that's where I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed. So I thought I'd throw that out there to you guys and to our listeners. And I know how I deal with it, but I know you guys have your ways of dealing with it too. So let me throw it out there. If you guys were in that position, what would you do to get through it? And how, and what would you do to kind of overcome the feelings of, I'm going to explode?
Well, I've definitely had plenty of moments of being overwhelmed with stuff.
Yeah.
And it's exactly true, Bart. Like the moment you leave the house, the car breaks down or there's a leaking something, water's destroying everything, stuff. All that's just real life things. But one thing, like as far as like your schedule getting overwhelmed, one thing that I did talk to Chip about the other day was the kind of gigs we wanted to say no to. Like,
ooh,
what do you want to do and what do you not want to do? And like part of what I shared with Chip was I kind of base my schedule around, like, does this help my career doing this thing or doesn't it? And the stuff that doesn't help my career, like, I don't need to do those things anymore. I don't need to keep paying my dues to that, that thing. And Chip was kind of saying similar stuff, like, I don't want to be in certain situations anymore. I don't want to do these kind of gigs anymore, and I'm not going to. So I think just being smart about what we choose to fill our schedule with can help mitigate how overwhelmed we become with things. But at the same time, you know, getting really uncomfortable in a situation, once you break through that, you're into the stuff that you want to do. So that's pretty broad stroke ideas. But for me, it's like, is that worth my time to go do this thing? Do I really want to do that? How does that benefit me in some way? I don't know if that sounds selfish or not, but.
No, not at all. That's, in fact, that's a way for you to keep sane, and then you're going to be a better drummer, a better teacher, a better husband, better dad.
Yeah, and I guess
not selfish at all.
Yeah, so Matt Starr's been like a really important person in my life the last, well, I've known him about 12 years now, but he's helped mentor me along. And one thing that he always says is put your mask on first. Like when you're on a plane, when they do the safety thing is they say put your oxygen mask on first and then help others. And so trying to adopt that in just real life is like making sure that I'm taken care of first, because if I don't take care of myself, then I'm useless to anybody else.
Yeah.
And
that's good advice.
Yeah, just trying to make sure that if I'm okay, then I'm in a position to help other people feel okay as well. But if I don't take care of myself, then being overwhelmed and exhausted and just useless to anybody that's not a good position to be in at all.
I totally agree with that. I found myself in a position a number of years ago, probably about 6 years ago, 7 years ago, where I felt like I was doing a lot of lifting in one area of my life, and the people around me were not doing the same amount of lifting. And this is another place where maybe you guys can give me some advice. So I kind of quit. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to do A, B, C, and D anymore, because I felt for me it wasn't appreciated and I wasn't taking care of me. And something you said a second ago, Rick, where you said you're going to be a better teacher, better drummer, but you said a better husband and a better father. And I think that's one of the places where we can get a little bit lost, you know, I know I did. And, I think when you put something down and these things still need to be done and it falls in somebody else's lap, then the reverse can happen. Then I start feeling guilty, like, oh my God, what have I done? But I really do think you do have to take care of yourself first. And since I've done that, a lot of fantastic things have happened with different areas of my life, with publishing and my own personal solo music coming out and stuff like that. What do you guys feel about that? If you kind of step away from something and allow somebody else to do a portion of the work, do you feel guilty about it?
That goes right into stuff that I was going to talk about with overwhelm. I mean, to circle back real quick on the feeling of overwhelm, this whole, you know, the sky's falling, it's not going to happen, I'm never going to get this done. I wanted to add that, first of all, you have to calm the disturbance. My friend Jeff Wilson used to always tell me when the you know what hits the fan, unplug the fan. That's the first thing. That's the first thing. And you know, affirmations about that is like, remind yourself that I've been through worse than this. I've been overwhelmed before and I made it through. You know, this may not be exactly the same situation, but I've climbed some pretty high mountains in life. So remind yourself of things you've gone through before, obstacles and how you got through those before can help you with overwhelm. But yeah, with that feeling of other people, you know, it's easy for me. I've been every band I've ever been in. I've been the webmaster. I've been the graveyard. I've been the CD salesman. I've been, you know, all this. I've been driving the van, and it got to a point where I started getting resentful, you know, because I was doing all the heavy lifting in every one of those situations. And it's just the type of person I am, because somebody, anybody walks up and on the street, some stranger on the street can walk up to me and be like, "Hey man, can you do this?" And I'm like, "Sure." You know, yes. I just say yes. And one of the things I've learned is some of the questions could be like, why me? Am I the best person for this job? Should I do it? Well, can somebody else do it? Is a great idea. You know, if you think about it, I'm in support of the idea of not doing things that don't bring you joy. If they don't bring you more joy than they take away, then you got to eliminate them from your life, or you're going to look back on your life and you're going to blink and it's been 5 years and you're not happy about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very true.
That's right. That's my take.
I want to add something that Fred mentioned about his conversation with you, Chip, about knowing when to say no. I've hosted drum clinics here, you know, more like drum workshops, because my studio isn't big where I could fit 50 chairs, but I can fit like 10 or 12 people stuffed in and do workshops. So I've had different top drummers in, you know, Zorro and Gene and Daniel Glass and all. And so I had an opportunity, and I've had opportunities to host lots of other drummers, because everybody's just trying to make a buck, man. They're trying to, hey, I'm in the area. I have a gig in the evening. Can I come to your studio and make $1,000 that day to teach drums, right? But the pressure on me to do that is immense. It might be that they're teaching an hour and a half drum clinic, but if I'm going to host a drum clinic, you know, that's 20 to 40 hours.
Yeah, easily. Yeah.
40 hours of my time. How much time? So what's going to give? What is going to give? Like, am I going to not work out? Am I not going to spend time with my wife? Not an option, right? Am I going to teach less? Well, that's not going to happen. So, Chip, I asked you because, you know, of course, I love hosting, and it is great for my students, and I learn stuff, and it's great for networking. But I had asked you about it because I was feeling a little overwhelmed and pressure. And it kind of keeps happening. And you said, if it's not an emphatic yes, it's an emphatic no.
Yeah.
That put the fire right out. And I'm like, it's just not convenient. I'm just not going to do it. So,
you know, I think that's a good point. You called me like I called Bart recently in an overwhelming situation, and I asked for help, which is another step to overcoming overwhelm, is reach out. Think about your human resources. Mm-hmm. Who can you call in your life that you trust and talk it out with them and get through that feeling so that you can get your feet on the ground, you know? Our heads in the clouds, but our feet's firmly on the ground where the work is, and get focused on taking care of those next tasks. That one thing I'd like to add while I got a chance before I forget is, you know, Bart also told me, how do you eat an elephant? And, you know, I asked my friends this question about being overwhelmed, and a couple of them, almost all of them, said basically the same thing Bart said. It said, you know, any approach is like a huge undertaking. Jeff said, eating an elephant sandwich. You just do one bite at a time. And then the other one said, small digestible bites. Break it down into small doable tasks and take one at a time. And that reminded me of the elephant quote that I heard a friend of mine say, how do you carve an elephant out of marble? You start chipping away at the parts that don't look like an elephant. You start hacking, like Bruce Lee said, you hack away at the unessential. So one of the things to help with overwhelm, and you got a big weekend, Bart, you got something going on, is there anything in there that you can eliminate? You know what I mean? Is there anything you can live without? And start with maybe some of those.
Yeah, yeah. Let me ask you this, Chip, and this is to all three of you guys. And I think we've all been there because we've all been in bands. And Chip, since you brought it up, it's so easy when you feel overwhelmed to, in a situation and you feel like the pressure's on you, that all of a sudden now you start building resentments, and nobody wants that. I've had resentments built towards me, and I've built resentments towards people. Okay, that's the way life works. I have my answer for it, but I'd like to hear your guys' answers, because it's real. I think we've all been there, where it's like, why in the hell am I doing all of this work while that person is not doing what we think they should do? And therein lies the sentence, what we think they should do. We don't know what they're doing. So there you go. There's the grenade in the room.
Let me hear. Well, it's more of like, why does that much work need to be done? What's our motivation? Is it, you know, and the expectations of others to get to put that much effort in? You know, like what's the motivation to just keep on pushing and pushing and pushing? I mean, maybe if it's pure passion and it's pure fun. Like, I know you're that way, Bart. You love your work. Like, you're really passionate about it. So that's a fantastic thing.
Yeah, but he's writing like 4 books right now. It's crazy.
Yeah. 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 I mean, so I think the answer is in somewhere that if you really love what you're doing, you're energized with it. Mm-hmm. And therefore you're not as overwhelmed, and you're not gonna, you know, have to push others to contribute, like we've all experienced, like, oh, I'm doing all the work in the band. But if you really, really love it, and it's not overwhelming, then you're on the right track. But if you're feeling all of that stuff, then maybe you have to look at, well, why am I doing that much stuff? Is it really necessary for survival? Warren Buffett just retired, and I was listening to a podcast on all of his concepts of, you know, all of his thoughts and wisdom, and one of his thoughts was, get one thing down and do it really, really well. Get that one thing. So maybe we need to just look at, you know, like the 80-20 rule that we've talked about before, where 20% of your effort actually gives you 80% of your results. And so maybe just prioritize is a thing. And then, so I don't know if that's helpful, but I do want to address too, Bart, you were talking about delegating, because this ties in with this. I think delegating is an amazing thing if it's, you know, the win-win for everyone else. I've had, so.
You're good at that, Rick. You're good at that. You really are.
What I realize I'm good at is, you know, I feel like I'm best at teaching drums and writing method books. So, you know, so I have a student, she's been with me like 9 years, Rebecca Sykes, and she's amazing with technology. And so we barter, she gets drum lessons, and then I get her experience with all the tech, like all these mics and everything, all this lighting, all this electronics, you know, that's all from her. And if I just tried to do it myself, I would be totally overwhelmed. So I know she's better at it, but I've got to be able to offer her something in return. And so she gets lessons. She doesn't pay for drum lessons. And I give her all my extra gear that I'm not using or that's just a little worn out. So I don't know, hopefully that some of those things are help people out.
Those are great. Fred, what do you got? Let me hear.
Well, I think sometimes resentment grows out of the feeling of being taken advantage of. Like Chip said, like with his situation, he was always driving the van. He was always taking care of merch, it sounds like. The daily tasks of being like a tour manager, so to speak, and being the drummer and having all this responsibility. Now, I was in the same position with my band for a long time. There are other forces involved that they weren't. I was always called the dad of the band, so your mind will probably wander to things you don't want. But it got it. I just felt beat down and taken advantage of, and now it's like everybody in the band has a job to do, and part of it, like, you could feel overwhelmed and taken advantage of, but sometimes you don't want to let go of the reins because they're not going to do it how I do it. But, yeah. You know, it's realizing that it's okay to let go of those reins and let somebody do it how they do it, as long as it's getting done and the results are what everybody's happy with, is just letting go of those reins and going, oh, well, that's not how I would set up the merch table, but maybe it's actually better, you know, the way that they're doing it. It doesn't have to be the Fred way all the time.
It's really easy to be controlling.
Yeah.
And you don't realize you're being controlling. And then all of a sudden you start thinking that other people are being controlling and you're like, wait a second, hold on. You know, it's like if you wake up in the morning and everything around you is bad and everything's negative and that person's a jerk and this person's a jerk. Maybe it's not all those people. Maybe you're just having a bad day and you need to step back, you know? Yeah. And so I think the same thing with that. I think the same thing with when you're like trying to, when you're trying to do everything, you're not the best in the world at, you know, 20 different things, just cut some of the fat and do what it is that you are good at and let other people do their thing. And, and it doesn't have to be done your way.
Right. I think for me, getting in that position, and it might've been the same with Chip too, is like nobody else was stepping into that role. And so you just step in and you take control, and then it's been going on for so long that that's just the way it is. And it gets to be a bummer because you want to hang out too, and you're stuck dealing with everything.
Yeah. It's like a relationship, right? It's no different than a long-term relationship. You start building, if you don't communicate your needs and your situation and what your expectations are ahead of time before you get into that situation, or when you first get into it, you can find yourself, or I could find myself, I should speak for myself. I found myself in a lopsided situation a few times. And like Bart said, if this guy's a jerk, that guy's a jerk, this guy's a jerk, pretty soon I got to realize who's the jerk, really.
Yeah. Because,
because I'm like an actor that wants to set up the show and arrange the lights and the play. And if everybody would follow the lines that I wrote, the show would come off fine. But it doesn't work that way in real life, you know. Other people are other people. I've found a lot of peace in learning about acceptance, you know, learning about having, you know what, this guy's never going to, you know, if it's going to take somebody else to change for me to be okay with something, I'm in trouble.
Yeah. No kidding. No kidding. I'm on it. Lindsay McDonald in the comments on YouTube, he said band dynamics are tricky. And this does work into the overwhelmed thing, right? Because, you know, what I've learned over the years, and I still have to kick myself in the head and go, Bart, pay attention to this, pay attention to your own words, is that the dynamics of a band where you kind of start feeling overwhelmed, what we're talking about, where you feel like you're doing a lot of the work, is that you don't know what the other guys are doing sometimes for their share of what it is that they do. And if you're in a tight band and you guys have been together for a while and you're touring together, the hardest part about touring is not getting up on stage and doing the show. The hardest part about touring is just living with the people, you know, being in a car for, you know, a month on end, or, you know, living in an Airbnb or rooming with somebody in a hotel. It can be taxing. And so you have to learn that they're people too. And I have siblings, but we didn't necessarily grow up together. But I was always around my cousins, my three cousins, John, Bill, and Richard. And man, these guys would fight like cats and dogs. And I mean, like fist to cuff sometimes. It's like watching grizzly bears. And you're just going, oh my God, you know. And what I learned from that was that, and at the end of the day, they were brothers and they would do anything for each other. And if you're truly in that sense of a band where you have a brotherhood, and people say that and they live by it, you got to just learn to live with that person and the way they do their job, like you said, Fred, and it's not, you know, it's maybe not your way, but they do it their way. And at the end of the day, if it's getting done, then it's getting done. And if it's not getting done, maybe it doesn't need to get done.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know?
That's it.
Isn't it amazing how these band dynamics that we're talking about are actually life dynamics?
Oh, yeah. Very much so. Yeah.
Interchanges.
Yeah. Yeah.
It takes a lifetime to figure that out sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of my solutions for overwhelm come from my brain takes an idea of what I've got in front of me, like my book, Stick Tricks and Showmanship. This is a big project. I've been working on it. I've been working on and off over about 3 years, and I stopped working on it because, oh, it's too big. I can't handle it. And it goes, my brain creates this situation and builds up this fear.
Drummers, have you ever worked with a guitar player who owns an extremely high-end acoustic guitar and they shove a pillow in the sound hole to dampen overtones? Of course not. So why would you do that to your kick drum? The Aquarian Superkick line of bass drum heads is an industry bestseller and a favorite among drummers, drum techs, and recording engineers who want a musical control bass drum sound without the use of blankets, pillows, or external muffling. The patented floating muffling system uses a narrow band of acoustic felt for a pre-dampened yet natural sound, eliminating unwanted high-end frequencies and boosting low-end punch. Often imitated but never duplicated, the Aquarian Superkick delivers superior tone control without all the extra work.
And it's like, you know what? To get through that, one of the things sometimes is just to take a blank piece of paper and start writing it all out. So when you mentioned resentments and dealing with other people, 9 times out of 10, if I'm able to sit down with a piece of paper, write the person's name down, talk about what it is that's bothering me up, and just write it out and get it out of my head instead of so it doesn't sit in my brain. It's out now. It's a conscious thing. It's called cognitive distribution. When you take your thoughts and put them on paper, when I take my thoughts and put them on paper about a person that I'm resentful for, 9 times out of 10, it eases the whole situation. It takes the power out of it for me.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Let me throw this out to us. Okay, let's as far as overwhelmed is concerned, you know, sitting right behind me over on this side, I'm backwards, is my drum set, and I spend a lot of time right there. Mm-hmm. I spend a lot of time in this room. I'm looking at a practice pad and some music over here. I'm a professional musician, and I feel like I'm just barely scratching the surface on how to play those darn things. And I know that some of us, we all feel that way. And I think it's because we love it so much. So when you walk in and you sit down and you look at your practice pad, and there's the Wilcoxon book, and there's syncopation, and there's stick control, and back there is a plethora of other books, that in and of itself is overwhelming. You go see Jason Bonham play and you're like, how the hell do I do that? You know, I mean, you know, you get those feelings. How do we deal with those feelings?
I got your answer. Bart, honestly, from your heart of hearts, if I was your drum student, and I came to you and I said, I got this practice pad. I got this Wilcoxon book. I got the syncopation. I just saw Jason Bonham. I don't even think I want to throw my drumsticks in the trash. What would you tell them?
Practice. You're going to be the best you that you can possibly be. Don't compare yourself to everybody else. You got to be the best you that you can be. Don't compare yourself to Jason Bonham. You're never going to pick up all those books and soak them into your head. Enjoy the journey. Enjoy the practice.
You know what I would tell them?
That's great advice.
I would tell them, burn all that shit and get Rick Stojak's How to Build a Drum Group.
It's funny that you would say that.
Fred did it. Look at that. Look at that. I'm being super, super, super hammy. Well, you know, Bart, also, too, not only is there all that work, on a serious note, all that work, you know, all those books and all that pressure to be so good. And then we've got these things, our iPads and our phones. Look at how much potential work. I have like 50 apps in front of me. That's work. I mean, It's so, 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 so tempting. And then you know what happens? You get work. We get work done, right? Completed that task. Then it's the, what's the next step?
Yeah.
What's the next step? Like, okay, I got that done. I'm not satisfied. I mean, I got a little burst of dopamine because I finished the project, or I got some likes, I got some more views. The crowd was clapping, but now I'm ready for the next gig, and nothing is ever good enough. And that's, I think, how we're wired now. And I think society feeds us that way, and social media certainly does. I'm constantly telling students to stop watching YouTube. I can't believe I've gone to that point where, you know, instead of actually practicing the instrument, they're searching websites on quick fixes, quick videos. They're spending the whole time just searching for what to practice, which is just aimless tidbits. And so I think it's getting focused, and it's all that Zen stuff that we all love, you know? I think some of that's the answer, and then figuring out what motivates us, and then listening to that voice in our head that's always go, 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 and listen, and questioning it. So that's kind of me a little, I think.
I have a couple things I think that might tie in here. One thing that Chip was talking about is like, maybe overthinking and all these thoughts pop in your head and you start like coming up with all these different scenarios where things might be going wrong. And then he said like, oh, just start writing it down, like get those thoughts organized. Sometimes you've got stuff to do and you start thinking things to death and talk yourself out of it.
Yeah.
And then you're bummed because you didn't follow through with that. I recently, a few weeks ago, was asked to play in an Eric Clapton tribute band. And so I got the call on Sunday. I needed to learn 15 songs before Wednesday night's rehearsal and then the gig on Saturday. So I said yes, and I suddenly had 15 songs to learn. And I was a little bit panicked about that. I felt like I'd stepped in the deep into the swimming pool for a moment. But then I realized I did know how to swim, so that was good. But I have students come in all the time that get overwhelmed with things and simple things too that we would look at and go, that's pretty remedial. Like what's the struggle with this? And you guys have all written books. Rick's got 4. I'm not sure how many that Chip has. I know he's working on a new one. Bart's got
it. I've got 3 from my past.
And that's a big mountain of work to put together. And so when I first got, this is volume 1 of Rick's books. And when I first got it, I was reading like the acknowledgments, and the very first sentence popped out in my head. And it says, my heartfelt thanks go out to all the dear people who made this book possible. And I thought, what a great first sentence to have in his book. And like, I'm sure for Rick and you guys too that wrote books, like the amount of effort and time and research and all of this to put this into a physical thing, I doubt you could even count the hours and the frustrations and the discouragement that probably went along with all of that stuff. And so I had a student experiencing like some really rough patch. Like, I think just stuff that was going on in his life. And then we were working in stick control. And he was really struggling playing eighth notes and then switching to eighth note triplets and back to eighth notes. And I said, hold on a second. Hold on. And I just got this book from Rick. So this has been a while ago now. And I handed him the book and I said, I want you to read me the very first sentence in this book. And he said, my heartfelt thanks go out to all the dear people who have made this book possible. He just read the sentence. I said, read it again. He read it again in the same way. And I said, now start to internalize what you're reading. And so when I asked them to do that, they said, my heartfelt thanks go out to all the dear people who made this book possible. So as I have them read it over and over and internalize what they're reading and personalize it, they started becoming more animated in how they read this one sentence. And so the end result was they went, My heartfelt thanks go out to all the dear people who made this book possible. They get really animated and they start to really put feeling into this one sentence. And I said, okay, now you're looking at stick control. Instead of reading these dots on the line, I want you to read eighth notes and eighth note triplets as my heartfelt thanks go out to all the dear people who made this book possible. And instantly he played it because he like stopped looking at it as an exercise or a task that he was trying to do and just took something very simple like that, an exercise, and breathed life into that thing.
Wow.
And so I've been using that sentence out of Rick's book almost daily with different students who start things. and it's just like, it was just like the perfect thing to demonstrate, like, stop looking at this thing as a task. This is something that you really, really want to do. And you
something
really
you get to do. At. Yeah.
Something you get to do, and stop looking at eighth notes on the hi-hat, one and three on the kick, two and four on the snare, instead of just being very clinical about it, like really breathe life into that, because it changes how you hit the hi-hat, how you hit the snare, how you're kicking the kick drum by thinking in those terms of my heartfelt thanks go out to all the dear people who made this book possible. Like, I get that in their head now. And so they're looking at, it doesn't matter what we're working on. It could be Future Sounds, David Garibaldi. And they start looking at that as my heartfelt thanks, and they play totally different because they're internalizing that thing. So in like the world of being overwhelmed, it's like, if you really, really want to do it, how are you going to put your passion into that so it doesn't feel like an overwhelming thing? It might be overwhelming like a time crunch or something like that, but like the passion to do that, that excitement to go and play that gig, like for me, learning all the Eric Clapton songs and the time crunch to be able to do that, it was like, I really want to hit a home run with this. So it was, I had to do the my heartfelt thanks.
I think that's a good one with, I want to hit a home run with this.
Yeah.
Starting out, you're overwhelmed. You're looking at this stuff and you got to think, wave the magic wand and imagine the goal. What am I going to feel like when I achieve this goal? And feel those feelings of accomplishment and serenity and peace and just, wow, I'm capable. I did it. You know, I got a gig one time that had like 32 songs on the set list of Elvis material, and everybody knows Elvis material, but you know, I was overwhelmed, like 32, like really guys, we got to do 32. I got to learn all this. And one of the things I did was went through the songs and I thought to myself, okay, first things, I got to hack away at the unessential. Which are the ones I already know? And you know, listed those. Yeah. Which are the ones I don't know? And I listed those. Which of the ones that I don't know are the hardest ones? And then I targeted those ones, and I just started there, eating one bite of that elephant. You know, as drummers, we're lucky. We don't do the chord changes and stuff. We're basically concerned. I should speak for me. I'm basically concerned as a drummer when you give me a bunch of songs. I'm going to look at the start, the stop, and any breaks in between. That's there what I'm go. Looking for. If I get that groove, the start, the stops, and the breaks in between, then I'm 90% done with that song.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's a good way to look at it, man. Put a breathing life into it. That's good. I love that, Fred.
Fred,
I love
Fred,
it.
This is why we love you on this show, Fred. you know, from the bottom of my heart, I have to thank you for all of that. I mean, you really, really made that was so significant in my life, what you just said. I really, really appreciate it. And you are one of those people with a volume 5, because the 4 books were done, but you're helping me with the volume 5. So in advance, that applies to you. And what you make me realize is, you know, when I have to write, you know, a card or write something out, Joy always says to me, just write from the heart. And that's what that was. It was just what I actually felt. It was just my heart writing that, not my mind. And I didn't realize when I was writing that how important that was and how significant it was. Mm-hmm. And that leads me full circle to this whole conversation too, that this is an opportunity that we have to play in a band or have a community or have a relationship, and that And that we should just think about so much of what we've already done. I'm not saying rest on our laurels, but, you know, all of us here on this screen and people that we know and love have done so much. They've already put so much out, effort and energy. And so, you know, I think if we enjoy that, maybe that's one of the keys to taking the pressure off that.
That is.
Maybe what we're saying we've got to get something more done. Maybe what we're saying to ourselves is what we did in the past isn't good enough, but it is good enough.
It is. Oh yeah.
And that might energize us more. And then we find ways to get it all done and we find less, we become less overwhelmed. Well,
what's the answer? What's the answer to fear is faith. You know, gratitude and love is the opposite of fear. And one of the things that a friend of mine told me one time when I was, you know, imposter syndrome doesn't go away just because you got through it one time. It'll come back. And those fears that drive that imposter syndrome, my friend, I was in a bunch of fear. I said, what are you afraid of? I'm like, I'm in a bunch of fear right now. And he goes, are you in immediate danger at this moment? And I said, no. And he goes, then the fear is BS. It's BS.
You are
creating it. You're the one responsible for creating it.
Yeah.
That's, I like that. Are you in immediate danger right now? Yeah. I want to add something to what you said, Fred. First of all, I have to acknowledge that the way you just said that, Fred, about Rick's book is phenomenal. And I love that. And I'm going to borrow that. I mean, that's really deep. One of the things that I tell all of my students when it comes to their feeling overwhelmed, as a side note before I say this, Chip and I always talk about this in our conversations. I got to use my own advice. You know, I tell all my students, we think here, but we feel here. Right? Mm-hmm. We think here, we feel here. And that feel is the musical feel. It's the feel that we feel when we go on the road. It's the feel that we put into writing a card, as Rick said. And I want to catapult off of that into this. One of the things that I think is great about this community that we have here as drummers and what we have on deck is that sometimes we don't even realize that words mean something, and we don't realize that we're helping somebody when we say things. So it could be Rick's sentence that he put in his book. I'll tell you this, and I won't go into the subject matter, but I will say that Rick and I were walking through the streets of Indianapolis, at PASIC, you know?
Yeah.
And we're walking around, and we're seeing the sights, and you know, we're on like our 60th cup of coffee, I think, something like that. And so we're both talking about, we were enjoying our coffee and talking. And Rick said a couple of things to me that he didn't even realize he had said them. And it was just so poignant. So remember that in a positive way or a negative way, as a teacher and as a mentor and as a coach and everything it is that we do, that words mean something. And I think that when we realize that and we realize the power of our words and we realize the power of what it is that we put out there, well, if we're putting it out there, sometimes we got to suck it back in. Sometimes we got to say to ourselves, you know what? You know, you kind of deserved your book to be published, or you kind of deserve the standing ovation you got at the end of the you know, Eric Clapton tune when you played it so well. Whatever it is, you deserve it. We have to be able to, whatever it is that we put out there, we have to be able to suck it back into ourselves. Because I think as mentors, it's easy to not do that. At least for myself, it is. It's easy for myself to, you know, well, Jason Bonham would have done it better than I did. You know what I mean? You know, after seeing Jason the other night. I think it's easy to fall into that. And I think we have to learn to take our own words back and go, yeah, we can, I deserve this, you know, and it's okay. That's not narcissistic. That's not conceited. That's not anything. That's, yeah, I've worked hard for this, and enjoy it. Be kind to yourself.
I would like to challenge all of you guys that, you know, I have other books that are, but like when I'm looking at Rick's book, like, and any book that I'm working out of, or any song that a student's learning, is they're looking at it as reading my heartfelt thanks. So I would think, I would challenge all of you guys that when you're feeling overwhelmed and you get on the other side of that, to think my heartfelt thanks goes out to all the people who made this position possible. Like, you were tested, you were under pressure, and you came through the other side, you hit that home run, you accomplished the task, or you advanced in the thing, or whatever it is you're working on. When you're on the other side of that discomfort, just to go, my heartfelt thanks goes out to that, being under that pressure.
Yeah, you know, when I'm going through the overwhelm and looking at a project, I have my process of organizing my thoughts through lists on paper. I break it down into the deliverables, the single items, the single tasks that I need to do, and then I find the priority of those, and I know which one to go to next. The game is on. So, you know, I spent a lot of time looking for my keys one time, yelling and complaining to my girlfriend, like, where are they? Blah, blah, blah. I can't believe I lost my keys. Just this negativity mindset, like just really, really complaining about losing my keys. Then I found my keys and it was off into the next subject. And she said, you know, with all that complaining, you think you would have done a little bit of a celebration when you found your keys, you know? Like, so when you are tackling that project and you do take one of those tasks down off your to-do list, take a moment and say, my heartfelt thanks go out to me for finishing this task.
Yeah. And appreciating that you remembered, oh, there they are.
Yeah, there they are. I've got my keys now. Thank you. Thank you very much, universe.
Yes. Yes.
I feel your pain. I think in some weird foreign language, the name Robley, I think it means he who loses his keys, because it's like a curse in my family. My father and I have spent many years of our lives looking for keys. It's something that happens.
That's why my keys have a home.
Mine do too, but they never stay at home. They're always gone.
I have a quick story on that subject for you guys, not totally drum related, but it's one of those making lemonade out of lemons stories. An old buddy of mine in the high school era and then beyond, he always lost his keys. So what he ended up doing is becoming a locksmith. That way he could pick locks, and he ended up with this like massive.
Are you serious?
Serious. He ended up with this massive locksmith company, and you know, picking safes and all of this. This is a true story. Yeah, yeah.
That's incredible. We can't talk about anything more. The show's over. That's the best. Between Fred's, my heartfelt thanks goes out to and Rick's buddy becoming a locksmith. Yeah. We got nothing. You know what? At the end of the day, I want to say this, and we'll end the show. We're all drummers, and we brought this community together. We started this deck thing as a COVID project, and it turned into this really cool thing that we get to do every Tuesday. And it is a get to, not a got to. And I'm so thankful for the friends that I've made on this show. I'm thankful for the time that we've spent together and the inspiration that you guys have given me as a drummer and as a writer and everything. I mean, you guys are awesome. So thank you so much. I won't be here for the next 2 weeks. I'm going to be out running around beating on my drums. You guys are going to, I'll get the artwork done. You guys are going to tell me what the next two shows are going to be. I want you guys to have a great time. Fred.
Yeah, man.
Go play some Eric Clapton. Yeah, and thank you for being. Yeah. Yeah.
I look at this show and like my own show, the Drummer G podcast, like, there's this preparation that goes into doing that. And then I told Mary today after I was done with my show, I go, it's kind of like doing a gig. like you have this preparation and then you do the show and then it's over and it's like, ah, that letdown of this show being over, but this happy endorphins are going. And I said, now in like an hour and a half, I get to get on with the deck guys and do it again. And it's like another show. And then tonight I'm playing the Eric Clapton songs. I got three gigs today.
That's awesome. Beautiful. Well, remember, hey, everybody who's listening, remember, as Evel Knievel said, you're never a failure until you fail to get back up.
There you go.
Keep going. My heartfelt thanks go out to all of you guys on the show. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Fred.
Yeah, man.
And on that note, Rick Stojak for
Rototoms. Rototoms.
Yeah, Rototoms.
Rototoms. All right, we'll do Samba with Rototoms.
Okay.
Samba with Rototoms. I gotta hear this.
Here we go.